I'm Uncle Monster, and you're listening to Nutty Bites.
I'm Uncle Monster, and you're listening to Nutty Bites.
I'm Uncle Monster, and you're listening to Nutty Bites.
Hi, this is the real Uncle Monster, and you're listening to Nutty Bites.
Imposter!
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Joss, and today I've got an episode for you that was recorded in Balticon in 2018. And you might think, oh, that's a long time away. But it's not, because the Melting Podcast is still putting things out from Balticon. But more importantly, I wasn't sure that I was actually going to put this on this feed until I went to Mysticon and I realized, you know what? How to moderate a panel is a very interesting topic, and it is something that some people need to know. So, without further ado, please listen to us talk about how to moderate a panel. I swear it's not dry.
Before we get started, because once the plane takes off, it's going to be much harder to escape.
So a warning is always good for beginning a panel, yes?
Yeah, always good. And it never hurts to start, if you're in charge, it never hurts to start with the name of the panel in the description, give everybody a good, solid idea. The next thing that it's always really good to start with is asking your panelists to introduce themselves, starting to my left.
Hello, everyone. I'm Nuke Joss, and I am the host of Nutty Bites, which is a podcast, and I've been moderating, well, my podcast for a while, but at these panels for the last couple of years.
Hi, I'm Michael R. Underwood. I'm an author, podcaster, and publishing professional. I've moderated panels at a variety of conventions and conferences, including some Comic-Cons. So, hi.
My name is Ray Ridenour. I'm an artist and a longtime science fiction convention goer. I've been moderating panels off and on for about 30 years. And they've always been kind of slight, not very important panels, but there's been a lot of interesting things come out from them. That's one of my favorite things to moderate, is the opening of new ideas.
And I'm Electra Hammond. I'm your moderator of the moderator panel. I'm an editor and a science fiction writer. And one of the things I wanted to throw out at you now, this is going to be pretty informal. If anybody has any questions or contributions, wave your hands in the air. And I will let you contribute. I'm going to keep this pretty informal. At a lot of the professional conferences I've been hitting the last year or so, particularly World Fantasy Con and Nebula Conference, a lot of times they've been starting the panels with a statement about keeping your questions short and making sure they end with question mark and making sure that statements are brief, otherwise they'll be cut off. We're going to be a bit more kind during this, because this is more of a roundtable discussion, because we have a almost roundtable.
Yeah, like a rectangle discussion to me.
We have formed a very subtle curved line here, if you'll notice.
Yeah. But that's, especially if you've got a large room and you have people that you think your audience wants to hear, you've got some of the guests of honor on your panel or some leaders in the field, a statement like that might be very handy up front, because then if you need to cut somebody off in the audience who is being a little bit verbose, you've already warned them once, and then you can give them a nudge to, is there a question here, or can you please come, say what you're going to say, and we're going to have to move on. It keeps things moving. Let's get the panelists talking. Yay, I've said my piece. What's your favorite way to start out a panel once you've got your introductions done?
Well, my favorite thing to start out a panel is actually done before the con. As a moderator, what I like to do is create an outline, and then I send it to as many people as I can that I have contact information of that are going to be on the panel, so that they know what to expect when they get here. And that's my favorite thing to start it with. And then generally it's always, intro and experience. you know, like starting out the topic, an introduction to the topic, and then talking about people, what experience do they have? Because I feel that the audience kind of needs to know that people know what they're talking about.
Yeah, I think having a sense of what the panelists are bringing to the discussion is really great. And I definitely ditto the start before the panel. I like to prepare a nice list of questions and then share them with the panelists whenever possible. I like to do a bit of research on the panelists when I can and try to tailor my questions or the framing of the conversation to their backgrounds and expertise, so that if there is some really specific knowledge or perspective or some writing that somebody's already done on a topic, that I'm able to share that. Part of some of these conversations can be having already had some of the conversations and then reframing them for a larger audience, whether you've had the conversation one-on-one or at other panels, and you know, ideally you're getting a read-in from the panelists with that as well.
Well, I don't do quite so much research. I don't do quite so much preparation beforehand, because I kind of hope that the people that are arranging people for panels are putting them together because they have some facility that they share. Also, a lot of panels that I've found most successful are the ones that kind of bloom and blossom on their own based upon people. Mainly, they introduce their stuff that they've got. It says, I've done this book, I've done this thing, I've done that. And a lot of times when I'm moderating, we start talking in a row, and they say, it's kind of like a little bit of a pitch where everybody says what they're doing and why they think it's relevant to the panel. But then I start asking questions, and I try to act like somebody who's interested in what they're saying. Usually I am. It's hard to fake that, but I try to make sure that they understand that these things are cool. And it's kind of more of a round table. When we get into the facility of finding out points and finding out things, I kind of like more of a free-form ramble. And there are times when the audience, you kind of want to say, you know, what do you think? Sometimes you have a good discussion going at the front, and it lasts for a while and starts to die down, and then we bring the audience more actively. Hey, what does anybody else think? Or they'll simply start to raise their hands. So it's kind of like orchestrating a play with people that are kind of participating with how the play is going as well. I have done research on something that I didn't know much about, and so my research is mainly for me. But it's kind of neat to let it kind of build its own structure. If it starts dying or somebody gets very, you know, loud, or somebody gets boring in their long speech, I say, maybe we can talk about that a little less. I think that you're missing a point of that. So I'll interject another direction for it. And it's pretty much, it goes, and people can pretty much lead themselves a lot of times. And it's just, these are the ones I've been The idea of doing research sounds great, and in fact, it never much occurred to me that I might be able to do that. But it's a lot of the panels that I've done over the years, it's been based upon people that like talking about a subject, and it carries the day. You know, you get them into kind of becoming part of the panelists. One time I had a panel, we were talking, and all of a sudden the people in the audience started talking, and then the other one would interrupt the other one, and the other one would start talking. And it wasn't boring, and they weren't just selling a shtick. And I said, okay. He says, do you want to come up here and be the panelist? And no, go ahead. He says, but the point A and point B and point C, I think, are worth talking about. So all of a sudden, they and their enthusiasm, you know, might have gotten, but what they've actually said has helped us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a certain, but the control is always important, though. So
yeah, and I've had.
You know, it's funny, that's, participating in panels is how I ended up on Science Tracks, because I am an expert in my field. And that's kind of slowly I got.
Yeah, I've had some useful comments from audience members, but I've also had people who don't have anything new to say and aren't actually contributing, but believe they should be on the panel even though they haven't articulated it. And that falls back to the moderator, because when someone has violated the social order, as in speaking on a panel when there hasn't been the invitation for it, the moderator is the person who is empowered to rectify the social order, because other people pushing back against a violation of the social order is also perceived as a violation of the social order.
It's also rude.
Right, like, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but when people are rude, I assume you're being rude. You know, I'm agreeing with you if it doesn't sound like it.
I'm going to have a bunch of questions. I don't annoy anybody. I'm on a lot of science panels, and a few of them are fairly controversial. What do you do when you've got a person who, let's say their science is completely wrong, but they won't shut up about it?
I think a good way to... So we were talking about having people participate from the audience, and different panels will have different structures. For instance, this panel is going to be more of a conversation with the audience, and you guys, we hope, will engage. And then a lot of, like, science panels can often be more presentations, and that's where the guidelines that the conferences that Electra had been going to, the guidelines of, you know, hold your questions, wait for us to get to you, because we are going to cover things. And so when you've got something, say, like that, and somebody's just wanting to tell you everything that they read on InfoWars or wherever, you can sit there and say, oh, that's very interesting, but we're gonna go back to this topic and redirect it back to the panelists and say, we can have a great discussion after the panel, and leading to the idea that conversation after the panel.
There's also a variation of that, and that's the gosh wow. And say, so, oh gosh, I didn't know that about it. I thought they did that. I thought they went the other way. I mean, I don't really understand it. Oh well.
Okay, sarcasm.
No, not sarcasm. Gosh, wowism. You know? And I can be enthusiastic at something I don't know, which is a lot. So I can ask him a question about it. Breaks his stride. You know, and sometimes you can just throw them. If the guy is determined to power you into what he wants, you'll get it. But every so often, I throw in a little gumballs, you know, saying,
"See, that's very helpful for me doing presentations, especially since I do a lot of animal rights work. I get a lot of people who go, oh, but that's not how it works. You can do this or that. No, you cannot domesticate a tiger. I don't care how you looked as a kitten.
Yeah. Oh, my. Sorry.
I actually had a guy offer to bring kittens. Tiger kittens.
Do we have another question?
Yeah.
Keep going.
Okay.
May I?
Yes.
Having been on all three sides, that is to say, moderator and participant and an audience, I'm sure you all have, certainly been audiences. Nothing is more frustrating than having a weak moderator. I was on one at this very important conference. Very nice lady who actually believed us what we're going to talk about, what they said. And I don't want to mention her name because there might be someone here that doesn't know Trina King. But she went and she studied up on the thing, and she really had good things to say, and she was eminently qualified with something like science fiction and public libraries, school libraries, or public libraries, something like that. But unfortunately, we had Tom Doherty on the panel, and the audience wanted to talk about him and getting published and things. Well, she was having a panel. This was on. You know, that would have been a good time to ask him these things, right? But, oh my God, it was frustrating. Next time I was asked to be on a panel, I said, who's the moderator?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you.
Yep.
Always important.
That would be nice for that.
Okay, and another important detail.
Sorry, is that a follow-up?
Oh, I had a question, but if you have another thing that you'd like...
Let me throw you a tidbit, and then I'll get to you. If you are on a panel, or frankly, even if you're in the audience, if you've got a complaint about the moderator, or you think that we're absolutely awesome, if you could drop a note to Program Ops and let us know that the moderator was great, the moderator was terrible, any feedback at all helps us program for next year. Mm-hmm. End of public service announcement. Yeah.
Thank you.
Comment.
Sort of on the reverse, what happens if you have nervous panelists who are, like, taking a bit of time to, like, catch up and start talking in front of a group of people?
I have an answer to that because I've been that nervous panelist.
I would ask them questions. Mm-hmm. I would say, just turn over and say, so what are you doing? There was a gentleman who was a writer, and he was writing about Sherlock Holmes, and he had a number of books that he'd done, but for some reason he was feeling a little tenuous about doing it, and he's sitting there with his books, as a lot of people were, and he was really, and I knew what he wanted to talk about, but he's like there, so I just said, so, A, what have you been doing? Like, these are interesting illustrations of the books, and oh, wow, and he starts talking, and that seems very blatant and not professional, but sometimes it's you're handing them the microphone conversationally, and it worked because he really was. Everybody else is very verbal and very very fast and very clicking with each other, and this poor guy was like, oh. So,
I've been that person. My first panel was at a big convention, and I got put on with all the named authors that I grew up reading that inspired me to become a scientist. I had trouble speaking. Thankfully, one of them knew me and picked a subject that I'm passionate on. So try to pick the passionate subject, I would think, of whoever the panelist is.
Yeah. I want to agree also with Ray there that, you know, starting and jumping into a conversation is very difficult, and not everyone has those skills. I am fortunate in the fact that I am 7 of 9 children, so that's the only way I know how to communicate. So, but most people don't know how to do that. So, you know, putting somebody on the spot but really coaxing them into it is the best way to do it. It's kind of like inertia. If there's something stopping you, you know, you don't have the inertia to start, having the moderator or another panelist just kind of grease those wheels and say, well, what were your thoughts on that? Or can you... Do you have an experience where this has happened?
Yeah. And I also make it a friendly sounding request, like you're just talking to him. So if he's really scared.
Yeah. Yeah. Something else that I've on there have been times when I've moderated panels and we're trying to tackle some pretty heady stuff, and when I'll toss questions out and people kind of like, oh, that's a big question. So sometimes I try to filibuster a little bit by kind of unpacking the topic a bit more to see if there are things that catch for people. And sometimes it's, okay, well, I'd love to hear from you about this thing, but if you want to take a minute to think, could you talk a little bit about this? Because that it loads a question and lets somebody kind of think about something outside of the spotlight slightly while somebody else is discussing, and then I try to thread them back together.
Well, other parts of your job as the moderator is to make sure that everybody on the panel speaks as much as possible. And if you have somebody that isn't participating, one of the things you got to do is don't always start the questions by asking the same person to answer first, because being the last person to speak on a topic is really, really hard all the time, you know. Try to rotate it in your mind. Right. Ask the person to your left first once. Ask the person next to them. Ask the person on the end. And rotate it in your mind. Give everybody a chance to answer the question first. And if you've got somebody who's having trouble coming up with something, try and come up with a question that you think will appeal to them and ask them specifically. Lob them a soft. I've got a couple of questions over here.
Yes, the related note. I've been wondering about something I've heard panelists and panelists in general, not so much moderators, panelists in general, bring up through the years is dealing with either maybe both of the two extremes. And you just mentioned the person who's, let's face it, just sitting there not saying much of anything for whatever reasons, or the people who, or the someone who just gets off, I shouldn't say gets off, who just starts yakking about one topic and actually will not stop talking. How do we deal with that kind of person?
Everybody needs to take a breath. And as the moderator, it's your job to cut right in and ask somebody else. They take a breath and it's like, and Mike, what do you think about that? Or...
If they're being really belligerent about it, which there is a particular instance where someone at New York Comic Con where somebody asked a specific person a question and the other panelists stood up and started answering it, this is when a moderator might say, all right, but really we wanted, Sherry, can you tell me, you know, and direct it right in the middle of that person. That's kind of like your last option, but if you have to, rather than let your other panelists get steamrolled, you have to be a little more aggressive sometimes.
And I like what you kind of said, I hear what you're saying, but...
Yes.
And if they can hear, I hear what you're saying, but there's a certain satisfaction to people who go on, and, oh, they heard me, and they're kind of sometimes dumbfounded, then you can slip in.
And also the thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Always gracious.
Implicitly closes and you can open it to somebody else.
right.
Yeah, that usually works with me when I'm getting a little bit too talkative because I'm hyper. Oh.
Did we have other questions or? So,
okay.
Go.
Same thing. Never mind, come back to me.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, I want to give you all an example. If you get the opportunity over the course of the weekend, find a panel that Carl Cipra is moderating and go in and watch The Master at Work.
Yes.
He is, without a doubt, he will not just do the preparation work before this, he will introduce his other panelists because, you know, he's actually gone out and read their work. Honest to God, he will have read their stuff and will talk about it because he's read it. He does that level of backstory on everybody.
He also is a very trained vocalist, whether it's or, you know, it's
trained herald would be the problem.
Yeah, his voice is mellifluous and silent, silently strong, and very clear and very clean. And he's very polite, but also very kind of manipulative to things. So he's a terrific moderator.
Yeah,
and that's what you should aspire to be, as good as Carl.
On the kind of voice thing. I've seen at a number of conventions people, like, when there's, like, a little bit of a problem with the mic, people are like, oh, you know, you can hear me without, like, no, ask people to use the mics anyway. This is a point of access in terms of making each panel more fully accessible to everybody who's involved. If you don't have an AV person on hand, things can get tricky. So, like, having to do impromptu tech support is a whole different thing, but I would invite you all as moderators to push back against I'll just talk loud culture, because unless you have specific speaking training, it is going to be very unlikely that you're going to be able to over-enunciate so that people in the back of a room can hear you effectively.
As a sound person, I don't sound like my dad, I agree with you 100% on that, because I've only known of all the artists that performed at Weathervane, two that could get away with it.
So one of the things that I was thinking about hearing that and hearing what you were talking about with great examples is a lot of times being a good moderator is a lot like being a radio host. You know, people want to hear your guests. They want to hear them. And you're just there to facilitate. So, you know, if you do your research ahead of time, if you know what you're doing, and you know the idea of not having dead air.
Yeah.
You don't want to have dead air. And so if you think about with a panel, especially with the mics, if somebody came to your radio station and they said, this mic doesn't, I don't really like it, so they can just hear me anyway. No, they can't. They need the microphone, you know, much like someone in their car needs you to use the microphone. The people in a general panel audience will need a microphone. We say that in this particular panel where there are no microphones, but it's a smaller, different kind of setting.
Okay.
Well, that's very different from if you're like at a Comic-Con.
Yes.
The comment is, if the room is mic'd, there's a reason for it.
Yeah.
Use them.
Yes.
It's very simple.
Yes. This might be a stupid question, but
there are
for
no
the mics,
stupid questions.
Is there any issue with just if there's no tech support on hand? Can we just two panelists share a mic?
Yes.
Okay,
absolutely.
So. I've had mics go up and down, and we were doing shtick on the fact that I'm not holding it right. Oh, it looks like my dog. You know, something like that.
Nice.
May I make another point on getting people to talk and doing things? If someone is talking a lot, I generally play another gosh wow card in which it. You know, you really seem like you know something about this. So, do you have training? This stops the conversation from being la 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 la. Oh yeah, well I studied this. Oh, that's interesting. How long did you do that? A couple of years. Has anybody else had this kind of training in this? Or so all of a sudden, he's the person that they're asking questions of, kind of through you and the other panelists that are there to actually be the panelists rather than somebody else. It's a kind of a trick, but it's also a way to actually break his style, his or her blather style, and come up with something that he can actually add to it by having other people talk about an aspect that he brought up.
Yeah. Or corral someone who's an expert, but not really.
Okay. I've got a question for everybody out there. How many of you have moderated a panel or are going to this weekend?
All right. The guy in the hat.
Is there a question back there?
Pardon?
Was there a question?
No.
Okay.
No.
there are a couple of different styles of moderation,
mm-hmm.
and one is a non-participating moderator who just works on moderating, and if you're worried about concentrating on the moderation, you don't have to participate a lot in the panel if you want to focus on being the traffic cop.
I've been on science panels, and I don't know anything about the science very much, so I kind of go into that mode.
Yeah.
You know?
I've got at least
that
one
particular science, yeah.
I've got at least one this weekend where it's something I haven't. I think Mike's on that panel, the serial writing panel,
okay, yeah.
where I'm going to just be asking questions and keeping my mouth shut. But you can also participate in the panel. If you are participating in a panel that you are moderating, make sure you don't dominate the panel.
Yeah. I like to. So, for instance, at this convention specifically, there is this thing that sometimes when you suggest a panel, you become the moderator, and then you go, but I wanted to participate.
Uh-huh.
So what I normally do is, if that's the situation that I'm in, I say, so I am the moderator, but I am also a participant, and I make sure that people realize that's what's happening, so that they don't think that I'm starting to overstep my bounds, and that they know that, oh, okay, this is a, that kind of a setup, as opposed to a I'm just keeping the conversation going. I am not a participant.
Yeah.
And if you're... I've had the time when I'm the moderator and there were supposed to be four or five participants in addition, and then three of them are not there. And when your panelist pool becomes small enough, there, I think, becomes additional utility in a moderator contributing a little bit more to the panel to be able to round out some perspectives. I would say I still try to do that with care, and while kind of observing
the,
like,
careful about it.
Yeah, like making sure to not dominate the conversation, as Electra said, mm-hmm. but like one of the things with being a moderator is flexibility and responding to what's happening and reading the room. And there are times where, in my experience, it feels like the thing that will help a conversation moving forward is a little bit of presence from the moderator, especially when you have specific expertise that hasn't already been addressed.
There's an unspoken rule that if you outnumber the audience, it's going to be tough, and maybe you should call it a day. Of course, we never do. But it gets a little bit more back and forth conversational, and it's kind of interesting. If you have only three or four people in the audience, they must really want to hear you. So all of a sudden, it kind of becomes around the lay. It kind of becomes people giving their thoughts, and they actually become sort of panelists because you become sort of a conversationalist with the people because there's so few people. So it really changes the tenor. You still need to control it so it stays on topic, but it's very cool to have all of a sudden people in the audience. All of a sudden, you're making the panel as kind of a verbal work of art because there's so few people, and it's kind of a fascinating process that happens. It's very exciting.
That's really neat when that happens. There's also another phenomena that sometimes happens where, you know, we talked about the person in the audience, the expert, who's not really an expert, but sometimes there is an expert in the audience that could really do well to be brought up on the panel. And sometimes that's a lot of fun as you're going through the discussion and you're getting feedback from somebody in the audience and saying, you know what, why don't you come up here? And for real, like, it's rare. But when it happens, it's kind of a goldmine. An example is last year during Vex Mosaic, they were talking about Iron Fist, and somebody who worked on crews in New York during that time was in the audience. Perfect example.
Yeah.
Another person who's not here this year, but he became a panelist after being brought up on a panel because they're... too few panelists showed up, and they needed someone who was an expert in firearms. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes that can be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's rare when it happens, and you just kind of got to trust your spidey sense.
Okay, we've got a question.
Back to your comment earlier of, oh, you're the moderator now.
Yep.
That was a situation that I had last year, my first Balticon, first time suggesting something, participating, and it was, oh, I'm the moderator, and I did not prepare in time, and it was a mess when it happened. So what are your thoughts on what do you need in order to prepare in order to have a successful panel?
You know, the bare minimums for me are think deeply about the topic and come up with some questions that either you have for yourself or that you think a an interested but not necessarily informed audience member would have about that topic, and look up the panelists as much as you can and try to get a sense of where their interest and background intersects with the topic. And then if you can, building on top of that, specify or adjust some of those questions tailored to foreground or feature some of the background of those panelists.
I'll add that now that we're using Zambia, once we've got the schedule set, if you go log in and you look at your schedule, it will have a list of the other people on the panel with you and what they filled in on that awesome field of why I would be awesome on this panel. And that's a really neat field for those of you who aren't program participants. There's a field that you can fill out for each panel you want to be on, telling people why you wanted to be on a particular panel. And that's a great tool for the moderator so that they can find out interesting information about the other panelists that they might not
know. Now, you can access that even though you're not a member of the organizer?
Your schedule, you can see it. If you go back into Zambia and you look at your schedule,
okay,
it will show you that information for the other panelists on your panel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now that your schedule is up. And it's terrific. My favorite example of that is, I think, a LunaCon a number of years ago where I was doing a panel on libraries. And I noted that one of my panelists said, I do all my writing in the New York Public Library. And another one was a librarian. And a third one was a book club manager. But it gave me that information I didn't have. And that made it a lot easier to put the questions
together. It gave you an architectural structure kind of thing.
Yeah.
For a con like this, I stalk people. So I get the names, and I look them up on Facebook, and I send them a message kind of a thing to try to... I like to make contact with the other panelists ahead of time. Like I said, I like to send a little outline, much like I do with my episodes of my podcast. I create a very brief outline. And then one of the things that I never want to be guilty of is moderating a panel that goes over time. So I break them down into how long we're going to spend on those topics. And as we're going, sometimes those times will change, so I'll keep a pen with me so I can make notes so I know how much time, and I always have like a clock, so I know how much time that we have so I can wrap everything up by the end of
you
the
can,
session.
You can also say, that's it.
Yeah.
Every
yeah.
so long, you know?
But I don't want to be
you're
that,
the moderated,
that
you can
panel
say.
Where people are like, we got to get in here.
On Q&A, I wanted to loop back to something that I think is important on additionally on kind of the inclusion axis, which is to don't assume the gender of your audience
yes.
members, because when you're taking questions, you may end up accidentally misgendering someone, and that really sucks. So you can say, I'm sorry, like in the back with the orange shirt, or standing, you know, with glasses.
Mm-hmm.
You describe things that they are wearing. As opposed to using gendered language about them.
Absolutely.
Well, because English sucks with gendered language, let's be honest.
There are other languages that are way worse.
That's something that my educational background has for me, because
yeah.
especially with youths, you can't tell anything. So it's usually,
well,
Spider-Man
yeah.
shirt, what's up?
Yeah, presentation and identity
yeah.
do not have to correlate.
No, not at all.
Yes. Try not to insult your audience members. That's a really bad.
Yeah, and like something that I don't do much, but I would like to get better at, and I would love for panels to get better at, is inviting panelists to provide their pronouns.
Mm-hmm.
Because then that makes it easier for the audience members. There are situations which people wouldn't necessarily want to disclose their pronouns, but if you're going to be on a panel, that for me presumes a certain level of kind of being in the public space. That's for people to decide on their own, but I think it is something that I'd love to see more from programming.
That's a very good
excuse
point.
Me. So you'd like to see the pronouns of the panel members in the program
announcement? Not necessarily. When I was at the Nebula conference, I went to a panel on gender in world building and writing, and the moderator invited the other panelists to share their pronouns as part of their introduction.
Okay.
Actually, I really like that. Thank you.
I was wondering whether to do that.
That was a really good panel.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Sorry, I took us off in a different direction.
Yes. No, no.
It was a good direction. I really appreciate that being part of the community and such. That made me think about it. And it's something that science panels don't tend to think about.
Sure. And, like, on that same topic, I've been assigned on two panels, not necessarily as the moderator, but as a participant, basically to tank. This is a massive. This is a game term of basically taking aggression if someone is being an asshole. Cause, like, there are a number of topics that can be contentious, and there has been a history at several different conferences of really combative or abusive audience members and sometimes panelists. And one of the things that I think is important for a moderator to do is try to protect the panelists, protect the audience, and kind of protect the safety of that shared space. And sometimes that can be tricky because there's power lines and hierarchy and relationships and things. But for me, that's one of the other things that I try to bring to moderating or a panel is, like, okay, what in this panel may be really sensitive for people, and how can I frame this? How can I, like, what signals do I need to look for from panelists or from the audience to be able to read the room?
That's going to be very important for my Sunday night panel.
Okay.
I think that no matter how your panels are structured, you need to always have time for Q&A. And just running up until, oh, we don't have time for that, can be a big disservice to the audience. Because if they've been sitting there patiently waiting, holding their question, and then you run up until the time, oh, sorry, we don't have time for questions, it can hurt.
The one counterexample I would give to that is if it's a very contentious topic.
Yes, well, again.
Especially if you don't trust the audience to have good questions.
Yeah.
So there was a decolonizing science fiction panel at the Nebulas, and all the panelists and the moderator were people of color. And the moderator was like, I'm just not going to take questions from white people. And I'm like, okay, fair. Because that's a good way to avoid having a problem.
But the great thing is that they said it ahead of time.
No.
Oh, no. Okay.
And I don't mind there.
No, and that's fine.
Most of the time, I agree with you.
Yeah.
There is also a visual thing for if you're trotting along and it's doing pretty well and you're starting to get people starting to do that, or, you know, or thinking, check out how many people are doing that, and at what level. There's an anxiousness to participate that can allow you to help time out and try to maybe everybody in the panel to notice this. So the language that's being panel language talking can suddenly start to then include the panel the audience members, and it can kind of almost come into Q&A by itself. That doesn't happen often. But just a little bit of activity that's going, you're knowing that people are really wanting to participate.
Yeah.
Okay, you brought up a really important point that we should probably, you know, hit really hard. You're the moderator. You're in charge. Be very aware of when the panel starts. Show up on time. Be very aware of when the panel ends. Here it's 5 minutes before the hour, if they're hour-long panels or hour-long slots. End your panel on time. Some of your panelists may need to go someplace else and do another panel, and it's really embarrassing to have to, like, get up while the panel's still running and run out.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, good point.
End them when they're supposed to end. Pay attention. Have something that keeps time. That have a pen and a paper with you so that you can, like, take notes when somebody says something really important or interesting. I got to ask about that later. Be writing things down. Be taking notes.
My phone is still a flip phone. It has a really annoying jingle that happens, right? So if I set it for five, I haven't done this yet, but if you set it for that, I say, oh, who is that? That's fine. Okay, I'll time to end you.
Whatever works for you.
Something on Q&A, I've seen moderators do this, and I think it can be cool, especially depending on the topic. Sometimes I'll see a moderator take questions right at the very beginning, especially on topics that are like, learn about business of publishing, or how to query, by polling the room right at the very beginning.
And helping them out, too.
an experienced moderator, especially if they're experienced with the topic, can live reframe a panel based on the audience interest.
Absolutely. That's a really great, especially for how-tos, it's how much experience does the audience have? What are they expecting? Because you don't want to be talking about like agents if they don't want agents.
And
you know,
also, if it's
thing.
Off, also if the name of the panel is a little vague,
yeah,
so it's a good way to help you out to have people say what they want, what they think that it means. So, oh, so that's what it means. And then you can go ahead and be a better moderator.
One thing that I have found on sometimes is, you know, I think that the Q&A is very important to always have. And sometimes, depending on the audience, especially if it's a sensitive topic, sometimes they're not quite comfortable to ask their question yet, or they just need a little help. So sometimes you can come up with a little game. And depending on the topic, you know, say I'm doing a Marvel podcast, you know, it's like, so just tell me your name, your favorite character, Marvel character, and your question, or, you know, tell me your name in a Hulk voice or something like that, where everybody does this cute little game as part of their asking of a question, and it kind of relaxes them before they actually have to ask their question, because some people, it's hard being put on that spot.
And if it's a kind of a dark panel, you can use a dark question, too. Like, it's the death of superheroes. Says, so what superhero would you like to see dead now?
Mike exactly. is totally stealing that from Dangerous Voices.
That's great.
I'm sure of it. Okay. And what do you guys want to do when, you know, the audience doesn't seem engaged? How do you get things moving? What kind of things do you ask your panelists?
I want to steal his last suggestion for Q&A, which is, you know, where he said do it at the beginning. Well, if the audience doesn't seem to be engaged and they're drifting off, just start asking them questions now.
Yeah, like, okay, so, you know, we've gone for 30 minutes. We can do a couple different things. I wanted to check in with the audience. Do people have specific questions that you'd love the panelists to address? And you can kind of take a question and more explicitly put it into your own outline.
You're turning it essentially into something that most people are used to, which is a teacher's question
mm-hmm.
form.
Yep.
You know, but you're a pal and you're a panelist and you're asking, but it's still couched in this way. And then I would imagine it would makes me easier to think of a thing to say next because I've been given the structure that I'm experienced with.
And I did see somebody do that last weekend and it worked beautifully. You know, it framed as I want to know what you all want to get out of this panel, and then they asked.
Yeah,
and it was a beautifully done panel.
But you don't have to do it. You don't have to take that question and apply it if it's bad.
Yeah.
By the way, I think Electra, you also I've been noticing your hand gestures. It also helps a little bit to focus. You don't have to. You can do something that actually it points out people a little bit, like a suggestion, a little bit like or looking at something. There's a body language thing as a moderator that can help sometimes, especially if the room's kind of frozen, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's another thing. When you're the moderator, try and sit someplace where you can see all of your fellow panelists.
Yeah.
It's really hard if you're sitting where one person is to one side and everybody else is to the other side, because I guarantee you will spend most of your time dealing with the people to one side, and that poor person that's sitting off to your other side that you have to turn around to look at, you will not be talking to them or including them in the panel as much. So either sit in the middle or sit at an end.
Yeah. And that brings me to eye contact. Making eye contact with your panelists and then with the audience when they're engaged in questions can really move things along. Whereas if I were trying to talk to Michael and I'm not looking at him, he doesn't feel like I respect him or that I actually want him to answer. But if I look at him and I tell him that I value his opinions, I can encourage him to talk back to me.
Yeah, and the trick there is if you're doing that, but you're also using microphones, you have to do a little bit of play with, you know, kind of where you are. You know, it's
absolutely.
Like, okay, so the mic is here, but I'm talking to you, and I want to keep the mic in mind, and I probably want to keep it so that if people need to read lips as audience members, that they can also do that.
That can also is good if you well if somebody forgot to put. Microphones for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You can get into a shtick of saying, "You know, this one's working pretty well. How about you? Should I just open it a little?" You know, so you get into a little bit of that it's a focus on the fact that they were working with a handicap.
They didn't forget to put them for everybody. Microphones are expensive. And they put out as many as they have.
Now, sometimes that's right, but other times they forget them. There's, you know, it's happened. But it just, I guess you should beforehand saying, is there a mic for everybody? Then that would, that, you know what it, thing to do.
Yes, and we're like fighting over, you know. People are very kind sharing microphones.
I was talking about a shtick thing rather than kindness. I'm just, you know, I'm trying to be funny.
The other thing I'd say is if folks can't necessarily everybody see, Electra has a notepad and has been taking notes. I like taking notes even when I'm a panelist, and I especially bring notes in because as a panelist, you can write down, oh, this is the thing I want to remember to say. I write just a big checklist of things that I want to try to get into the panel if possible, and then I cross them off or check them.
Many people here are writing and recording assiduously. I applaud you all. I'm just sitting there.
I put everything in my phone down because I started to have memory issues with the MS and a couple strokes, so I just go.
Yeah. I also find that a lot of times a pad and pen can be very helpful for times that I have a little bit of impulse control. And because sometimes you're like, oh, I'm so excited about this topic. I want to talk so much about this. And there are times that my impulse control is more difficult, and I'll write down what I'm thinking, even if I don't get back to it. I don't have to come back to it, but if I've written it down, I've taken care of the impulse.
You've given birth to it.
Yes, I've taken care of the impulse, I've given birth to it, and I don't have to disrupt the rest of the panel to bring that point up.
Well, but it's also fabulous if you say something that I want to be possibly ask you a question about that later or ask somebody else a question about it. I have that option if I've scribbled down a note about it. And I always have that in my back pocket for later if I want to come back to it. Yeah. And the discussion may go off in another tangent and I may never come back to it, but I don't have to rely on my memory because that may not be good enough. And it'll always be that, right, I wanted to ask about that thing and I don't remember it because we started talking about something else.
Yeah, and to build on what Electra said, I love when, while moderating, one can thread several comments together and say, okay, so building on what Electra said, I wanted to kind of bring in something that Ray had said here, and then you can kind of, the panel becomes additive instead of just kind of going along in a long sequence of topics. You can thread back and build.
I just wanted to know about I know I've been told like that if you need to call security or something like that for like, if you have a really horrible audience member, they need out, what is the general policy for that?
Make sure you've got the phone number for like program ops or con ops, because now everybody has a cell phone. Send a text message. They will come. If you send to program ops will send somebody from con ops immediately if the panel is still going on. Just send a 911, we've got a problem audience member in room, and someone will come.
And, sorry.
No, go.
On emergency stuff, I am told that if something like really bad is happening, it's way better to deputize a specific person. Mm-hmm. Like, I need you to call 911, because otherwise you get crowd paralysis. Or if you can't be the person to do it because you're doing something else, specifically grabbing someone's attention and kind of empowering or deputizing them to do a thing, as opposed to be like, somebody call 911.
Right. And if somebody's having a heart attack or something.
Yeah.
If you're just having just the disruption.
Yeah. Right.
Quietly.
If somebody's having a heart attack, please stop the panel.
I know I've had problems with panels before, and I've just sent it to ops, and you get an immediate response.
At other panels where you don't have phone numbers or if you didn't prepare and something that you thought was going to be totally fine and you didn't prepare for it, I have had this situation where I look for somebody, usually if it's somebody I know it's helpful, but I try to gauge who might I be able to ask kind of in the front, and I say, and I'll look at them and make eye contact and say, can you just go get somebody from security for me? And then they will go, generally they'll go, oh yeah, sure, and they'll go and they'll come back. And
everybody
worst case
who's a program participant here got a last email from head of programming mm-hmm. that included her cell phone number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, like I said, this is
yeah.
for other conventions, right. you know, everyone yeah, right. does it different.
And if you have a piece of paper, you can always, yeah, hit somebody in the front row,
yep.
give them a, and hand them a handwritten note that sends them somewhere or tells them to get security. And, yeah, there's usually somebody that you can grab.
Wow. You guys have been on some scary panels.
okay,
not that many.
We're at 2 minutes of. Does anybody have a last question or a quick comment?
Somebody who probably hasn't spoken yet.
anybody no? want to tell us where else you're going to be over the weekend or what else you're doing real fast?
That's a great closing thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if I may, please put wherever people can find you on the internet, because I'm going to put this out on my podcast so that they can buy your books or whatever.
Oh,
well, I'm going to be at a on Sunday. I'm going to be wearing a costume in which it'll be a kind of an old wizard with a chalaba, which is a full robe and things like that, and doing actor shtick. And but it's nice because you can be a model, but you can also be an artist. Okay.
Cool. So I'm Michael Underwood. I'm going to be doing a reading at 10 a.m. tomorrow. I'm co-leading the Dangerous Voices Variety Hour tomorrow at noon with Sarah Pinsker. Our guests are Galen Dara and Neil Clark. Then I've got a panel on serialized fiction at 5 that I think Electra is moderating. Comics Without Superheroes tomorrow at 6 p.m. I have cards for my latest series, which is an epic fantasy serial. If epic fantasy fiction is up your alley, just come see me.
I've got. Can I add a couple? Because you were good.
Yeah, yeah.
Tomorrow at 10. It's a contemporary near future SF. It's not dystopian. I'm actually a moderator there. It's contemporary near future SF. It's not dystopian. And there's an interesting thing on Monday at 1. Guilford, the Holdo maneuver. How the Last Jedi blew up our expectations.
We had a question.
Moderator there as well.
Statement.
Go.
I really enjoyed this panel. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much. I'm Nuke Choss, and you can listen to me talk more about podcasting tonight at 8 p.m. In the Pride of Baltimore about daily podcasting. And on Sunday, check out Geek Radio Daily. I'm going to be guesting on there. But you can also find my podcast at nimlas.org.
And I'm Electra Hammond. I'm going to be moderating a bunch of stuff tomorrow, and I'm going to be reading at 6 o'clock in the St. George, and you can find me at untilmidnight.com, and you should definitely go to Dangerous Visions, Dangerous Voices. It's absolutely awesome.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that. It was a lot of fun to go through and be a part of. As you listen, sometimes when people don't know each other on a panel, it starts off a little slow, but then everybody gets a really nice flow, and you can definitely hear that in this episode. But I hope everyone enjoyed that, and I just wanted to let you know there will be another episode coming out this week, so stay tuned. But also, I wanted to make sure that I thanked the patrons. We are so close to that theme music. It's really funny. Every time we get within a couple of dollars, we almost make it, and then it goes down again. But thank you, everyone, for making it so that you do have 2 episodes a month. So I definitely want to make sure that I thank the crowned king, Big Daddy Jax. I want to thank Jason Banks of the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast. I want to thank Andy Luke, Susanna, Shane of the Red Dwarf Introcast, Will of the Down Below podcast, Spartacast, and a whole bunch of other things. Sensate podcast, yeah. I want to thank Zach Mann, Greg Larson. You can buy his books on Amazon. Same with Andy Luke. The Radical Geek, Steve Pritchard, Susan, Lynette McFadden of Binet USA, formerly of the Bicast, but the Bicast is still going and awesome. Melissa A. Bartel, the Bathtub Mermaid. Harold Ian of the Web of Queer. Rich the TT. Patrick Scafito, you can buy his books on Amazon. Ken Kennedy of Kenzoid's Autonomous Zone. Kinsey, Mike of the Redacted Files. And Justine. Also, we want to thank our PayPal patron, Dagny, and I think Nick is sometimes still patroning. That's an in-person one. Thank you, everyone. We appreciate you, and talk soon.
If you like audiobooks and science fiction, you should be listening to Glow in the Dark Radio for free science fiction audio adventure every week, written and read by author and radio host Mike Luoma, me. As an up-and-coming independent writer, I share my work for free each week, chapter by chapter, to get you into my science fiction, I hope. Check out all my books at glowinthedarkradio.com and listen to Glow in the Dark Radio free each week on iTunes, TuneIn, or just head to glowinthedarkradio.com.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlas.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-Nutty42.